At 22, Donna Stolzenberg was homeless, and with two very young kids to look after, she was at her wit's end. Today, Donna's raised five children of her own, several more foster children. She studied psychology at university, and she's the founder of the National Homeless Collective, an umbrella of charities that help people experiencing homelessness, domestic violence, and social disadvantage. Donna's charity work all started with handing out a few sleeping bags to street sleepers, and, well, things have really snowballed from there, to the point that now Donna is Victoria's Australian of the Year for 2021. Donna Stolzenberg, welcome to the year that made me.
Thank you, Julian. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here, and congratulations on being Victoria's Australian of the Year. Now, you're a proud Indigenous woman born and bred in Kalgoorlie in the 1970s and 80s. Can you tell us a little bit about where you came from?
Yeah, so I was born in Kalgoorlie. My people are from the Ngadjami and Mirning people, which is South Australia, Western Australia, but I was raised on Noongar country, and we lived in Kalgoorlie until I was about three, and then we actually moved to Canberra. And I did all of my primary school years there. And then when I was about 12, we moved back over to Western Australia, reconnected with family. And, yeah, life sort of went on from there. I'm the youngest of four girls. So, yeah, we had a pretty busy house.
Absolutely. As I said in the introduction, at the age of 22, you experienced homelessness. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience, what it was like for you?
Yeah, look, it was pretty sudden, and I was living far away from home at that point. I was living in Queensland, and I sort of didn't see it coming. I don't think anyone who experiences homelessness really, you know, knows that it's about to happen. Mm. And I literally had a home one day, and then the very next day I found myself at a bus stop at 5 a.m. in the morning with two children and nowhere to go. And it was pretty terrifying. These were the days back before we had the internet, before we had mobile phones. You know, it was quite a long time ago. So it wasn't as easy just to get in touch with someone and say, come and help me. And I was new to Queensland, so I didn't have any friends there at all. So I went to Brisbane, stayed there for a while, and then managed to get back in touch with family and went back to Western Australia.
So how long was your experience of homelessness?
Look, it was a couple of months that I was in very unstable housing. Initially, it was the first couple of weeks that I stayed at a women's centre with the kids, and then there was a few months before. I mean, homelessness has quite a broad definition. It's basically insecurity of tenure. And people just don't have somewhere stable to be. So it was quite a few months after that before I found somewhere that we could call home again. And by then we were in Perth, so we'd kind of gone from one end of the country to the other. But it was quite a scary journey for us moving along from that, yeah.
No doubt. You mentioned that you reconnected with family, and I was going to ask you, you know, what turned things around for you? Was it that reconnecting with family?
Yeah, look, it was just hard to get in touch with people. With homelessness too, and what I was going through, there was a lot of sort of background isolation, a lot of shame, a lot of guilt. You often just can't talk about what's happening. It's just not that easy. And but once my family knew and found me, you know, they were fantastic and sort of got us home, and we were kind of fine from there. But, you know, we still had a lot of pieces to pick up, and I had a lot of changes in my life that I had to make, and, you know, things had sort of really flipped on their head. So I had to decide from that point, you know, how we were going to live, where we were going to live, what we're going to do. So there's a lot of decisions to make, and I was on my own with two children making those decisions. So
which is just, yeah, I mean, it's hard with two young kids to do anything, let alone dealing with all these extra challenges. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was really hard, especially traveling from one side of the country to the other as well. Yeah. You know, we just didn't stop for quite a while there before we could really sit down and relax a bit.
Mm. Now, as you know, this segment is the year that made me, but I believe that you've actually been able to pinpoint things to a moment that made you, or at least a moment that turned things round for you. And that was a conversation with an Indigenous elder. Is that right?
Yeah, with my uncle. So I remember the day really well. It was not long after I'd gotten back from Queensland, actually, and my parents had this sort of holiday caravan that all of our relatives used to go to in around Esperance in Western Australia. And my uncle happened to be there holidaying with us. And I remember saying to him, he was about 60 at the time, I was 22. And I remember saying, look, uncle, everyone your age always says to me, you know, I wish I knew back then when I was 22 what I know now. And I said, I don't want to wait till I'm your age to find out all this wisdom that you've got. I want you to tell me now, what do you know? And he said to me, look, if you're serious, come and meet me tomorrow morning. There was this big tree there. And I got up at about 6 a.m., went out, and he was there, and he gave me just the best words of advice and wisdom and how to live my life. And I've never forgotten it. And I live by these rules, you know, pretty much every day. And what he said to me was really quite life-changing at the time. And I think I was just lucky that I knew that he was a very wise person, and he was somebody really worth listening to.
Yeah, he sounds like exactly the sort of wise person you need to encounter at that stage of life. What exactly did Uncle Graham Tucker say to you?
Well, look, the conversation went for about 2 hours, which we can't go through here. But the key points that I took from it were two things. And the first thing he said to me was, you must never stop learning. You must always keep learning for as long as you're on this earth. Keep learning about things you're interested in. Learn about yourself. Take up hobbies. Keep studying. And at that point, I had finished school at year 10. And so from there, I went on to re-enroll in school, finish year 11 and 12, and then go on to uni. And that was with two little kids. But what I'd said to him after he'd said to me, you must keep learning, you know, go back to school, do all these things. Well, I just sat there and looked at him and I said, well, I can't. I can't because I'm a single mum. I can't because I haven't got a car. I can't because of this and because of that. And he patiently sat there and listened to me. And right at the end, he said, now you've sat through this whole conversation telling me why you can't do things. He said, I want you to now tell me how you can do things. Start thinking about how you can make it happen. And I was really quite floored by that. And I think for the first minute I was like, well, you know, well, I just can't. And I thought, no, this man has a lot of wisdom. He knows something here. So I turned my thinking around and I thought, okay, well, look, you know, if I got a part-time job, I could probably save up and get a car. If I got a car, I could enroll in school. I could look for a school that takes mature-age students. And all of a sudden I realized that within 1 kilometer of my house, there was a high school that took mature-age students. My sister rang me and she said, look, you know, my husband's moving to Africa to work for 6 months. Do you want to come and stay with me? I'll look after the kids while you work. And I thought, there's my part-time job opportunity. So I worked at this deli from 3 a.m. to 9 a.m. every day making sandwiches. I mean, it was really cruel work. 6 days a week, I had one sleeping day, saved up all my money, bought a car and enrolled myself in school. And I did year 11 and 12 with, 15 and 16-year-old kids. I was about 23 by this stage. Wow. And went to uni from there. And, you know, and I just haven't stopped since then. I just saw so many opportunities and so many wonderful things that are out there in this world and so many great things to do. So I just kept going and I'm 53 Absolutely. Now and I'm still going.
Yeah. On the year that made me, we're speaking with the inspirational Victorian Australian of the Year, Donna Stolzenberg, founder of the National Homeless Collective. And we've heard about the inspirational words she received from Uncle Graham Tucker. Donna, I should just check for the integrity of the segment. What year was this? So, and was that the year that made you?
Yeah, it was the year that made me and it was very early 1991.
Yeah,
1991. Yeah.
And as you said, you certainly haven't looked back since then. You've had more than your fair share of parenting experience as a mum of five. But as I mentioned, your parenting also includes a lot of foster parenting.
Yes.
How and why did that foster parenting come about?
Well, my mum and dad looked after a few kids when I was little as well, and I saw the benefits of, these blended families and fostering. And when I've got five sons, and at that stage I had three kids when we first started fostering. So I actually had two pregnancies while I was fostering. And I think just the circles that I was working in at that point, I did a lot of work with people who came from disadvantaged backgrounds and children with special needs, and I saw the need for fostering. So we decided to give it a go, and we did that for I think about probably 3 years and had lots of children come through. And it was when my youngest was born, he was born with a disability and quite unwell, that we had to stop because he was was pretty much needing all of our attention at that time. But fostering was a fantastic experience, and I learned so much from that as well about myself, about society, about people, families, kids. Yeah, it was wonderful.
That's amazing. Now, you started the National Homeless Collective in you started the National Homeless Collective in 2015, and 7 years later, you've got nine charities under that umbrella, all focused on different things and different niches. Can you give us a sense of the breadth of the work that the National Homeless Collective does?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it started out with just a couple of sleeping bags when I saw some people experiencing homelessness and really didn't know how to help them. And then I sort of look at it as putting out spot fires. When I realised that there was an issue, attending to that issue made me realise there were more issues. So I realised that there were people freezing out there on the street. So we started this project called Blanket Melbourne. You know, I'm everybody's mother and I just wanted to make everyone warm. So I didn't like seeing cold people. So we collected 3,500 blankets in 8 weeks and delivered every one of them, blankets and sleeping bags. And that's our oldest project. And then I met women on the street who didn't have access to menstrual products and experiencing period poverty. So we started the Melbourne Period Project Project 6 years ago, and that now runs nationally as well. And then working with the women, I realised that there were children out there that needed support. So we started the school project, which supports kids to stay in school but do school camp, go to swimming lessons. We provide all of the products for those. And from there, it was like, okay, well, we need to give people job opportunities. Homelessness is chaotic. A lot of people can't work but want to work. So we started a couple of back-to-work programs. We also have now a project called the Plate Up Project, which is where I was today, that's supporting women to work in hospitality but also reconnecting people back to the love of food and cooking. Often experiencing homelessness, you miss out on things like that. And we have an Indigenous-specific period poverty project as well. And, gosh, I have to actually look through the list now.
No, that's all right. You've covered plenty in that. That's amazing.
so many of them.
And more than a full-time job, obviously, you devote your time to the National Homeless Collective now. But the National Homeless Collective's gain was the Australian Taxation Office's loss, I'm told. You had to quit your job at the tax office.
Yeah, I did. Look, I had to make a big choice because I was working for the ATO and I love my job. I was actually working in HR. I'm not good with numbers, so I was working in tax. I'm good with people. Just don't give me any numbers. And I had to make a choice because more and more organisations and people were demanding support from us, you know, asking it. You know, they desperately needed it. So I made a choice to quit my job. And it was going back to that advice that my uncle gave me, you know, look for how you can. I initially thought, I can't quit my job because I need the money to survive. And then I thought, no, let's look at how you can quit your job. How can you move forward rather than you can't do it? And so I found a way to do that and left my work. And now, yeah, and that was like 6 years ago, and the charity is now national, and we are supporting, you know, thousands of people across the country every week.
One of the charities under the National Homeless Collective umbrella is Carla Space, which I believe is a very innovative employer. Can you tell us how Carla Space works?
Yeah, well, the Carla Space is an op shop where we support women experiencing homelessness. And one of the things that I learned with working with women in that situation is how chaotic homelessness is. And they all told me that they want to work, but there weren't any jobs that allowed them to start and finish at different times each day, depending on what they had going on. I mean, homelessness is so chaotic. You've got appointments, you've got meetings. You might not have slept for days. You might not have had a shower for days. They couldn't always show up for work, you know, for a 9-to-5 or even a casual job like other people can. So we realised that start and finish times were the biggest barrier to employment for people in this situation. So we removed them and we gave people 15 hours a week work each and said, look, come in when you can, leave when you need, and you don't have to tell us why you can't come in or why you need to leave early. No doctor certificates, no excuses, as in no reasons. I didn't need any reasons as to why they couldn't be there.
And you can make an op shop work using those rules?
Oh, absolutely, because we're a charity, so we buffered the staff absences with volunteers. Right. However, I do believe this process would work in any organisation where you've got tasks that aren't time critical or mission critical. I know every job that I've had tasks that as long as they're done in that month, they're fine, you know, newsletters, things like that. And so it is transferable to other industries. It's not just for op shops and charities. But we found that people were much more likely to stay engaged with employment. They were much more likely to stay engaged with their healthcare workers, their social workers. They were, their moods lifted. They had financial independence. They could then decide where they want to live rather than waiting for government housing or supportive housing. They actually got an income. Mm. And they were more likely to go on to other types of employment as well and get jobs independently from the Carla space. So it was a win-win all round.
Yeah, well, and in a way it sounds like some of the more flexible working practices that a lot of us have got used to through the pandemic. Now, one of the unexpected and sadly short-term effects of the pandemic was that emergency government initiatives to provide accommodation for homeless people reduced the amount of homelessness in the short term. But I also know that you're based in Melbourne, which of course had that epic lockdown. Can you tell us about your work in response to COVID-19?
Yeah, well, COVID-19 saw our workload triple because there were so many people who were not in our cohort who suddenly were, with job loss, a lot of students that were stranded here, a lot of part-time workers who were relying on hospitality to get them through and pay the bills. And our volunteer base was pretty much decimated because a lot of people were over 65 and they were too frightened to come out. We were heavily involved with the lockdown of the towers as well, with supplying nappies, formula and sanitary and toiletries products to people who were locked in there, play bags for the children to keep them busy, jigsaw puzzles and crossword puzzles for the adults, so they had something to do as well. And COVID saw us just, we worked every single day of 2020. We did not have one day off right through. And we had to close the op shop down, unfortunately, but it became a crisis response centre. And we had volunteers coming in and doing these packs up and deliveries. And people were moved into hotel accommodation, which meant that we didn't need to give as many sleeping bags out that year. Mm. However, it was a different cohort that needed our support. Yeah. And we gave, we fundraised something like about $80,000 and turned that into food and clothing and even payments for electricity bills and things like that to keep people warm. And it was a very hectic year, but it was amazing. We realised how dynamic we are, how much we can change according to the environment. What the environment dictates is needed out there. We were able to be first response and address so many issues that a lot of other charities weren't able to touch because they were too big, really.
Well, you are clearly a powerhouse, Donna Stolzenberg. Amazing stuff. It's been great speaking with you. And as we heard earlier, it all goes back to that year that made you, 1991. We always finish up by asking our guests to select a bit of music. What piece of music have you chosen go out with?
You know, I've chosen Crazy by Seal, and the reason I've chosen that, I didn't even know the song actually came out in 1991 until I actually looked at it the other day. I thought it was later than that. But, the lyrics in that sort of speak to me a lot with, where he's talking about, a world full of people, a heaven full of people, and only some want to fly. And isn't that crazy? And I just think, absolutely, that's crazy. Everyone just needs to get out there and fly and go see what you're good at. Just go try things. It's great. You know, there's so much about that song that I really love. And so many lyrics, but yeah, again, I'd be here for half an hour explaining it. It means different things to different people, but
no doubt.
When you look at it, I think it's just so apt for that year, and it came out in 1991.
There it is. Well, absolutely. Let's have a listen to it now. Crazy by Seal. Donna Stolzenberg, thank you so much for joining us on the year.
Thank you so much, Julian.
And sleep. a fractal on a breaking wall. I see you, my friend, and touch your face again. Miracles will happen as we trip. But we're never gonna survive unless we get a little crazy. No, we're never gonna survive unless we are a little crazy. Yellow people walking through my head. One of them's got a gun to shoot the other one. And yet together they were friends at school.
Yes, that is Crazy by Seal, the track chosen by Victoria's Australian of the Year for 2021, the founder and director of the National Homeless Collective, Donna Stolzenberg. And if you want to find out more about Donna's work and to support it, you can donate or you can be part of some great raffles that are happening for the National Homeless Collective. The website to go to is nhcollective.org.au.